All right, Alexander, let's talk about what is going on in the UK. Let's talk about the UK economy. And you have been traveling through Scotland. You were actually in Edinburgh. So you have a lot to say about your impressions of Scotland and perhaps the economy in the UK from an on the ground perspective, I guess you could say. So what are your thoughts?
Well, indeed. And I'll touch on that first, because obviously London, which is itself starting to look, you know, like it's sagging, and that's an understatement. It has been, it's been looking increasingly depressed for some time, but it remains far and away the richest region in the UK. So I was interested to see what things were like when you travel outside London. And actually, the signs of economic distress and economic stagnation are everywhere. And my conclusion is that the railway system in particular, which is important in Britain, is really in the process of breaking down. You're quite right. I was in Scotland. I travelled there by train, which is the way most people do. If they go from London to Scotland, they usually travel by train. A few people drive there. Well, it was hell on wheels, is all I will say. I mean, there was problems on the tracks. The train was stopped at one town. We were all taken out of the train. We had to travel to another town to take another train. And then we had to go from that town to a third town to take still another train to get to Scotland. It added hours to our journey. It was just it was awful. And I was talking to passengers on the train, and I was talking to people in Scotland itself, in Edinburgh, where I was. And they tell me this is absolutely standard. Now, this goes on all the time, that, you know, the railway system connecting London with Edinburgh, which used to run extremely well, and there was a reason why it ran well, which I'll explain in a moment, but that is starting to break down. And there are, I should say, two railway lines that go from London to Scotland. One follows the West Coast, and it's always been considered to be rather less efficient than the East Coast one, which follows the East Coast. But it seems that they're both now experiencing more and more problems. And the reason the railway lines used to be very good was because a lot of wealthy people in London have houses and estates in Scotland. And the way they used to go to Scotland was they used to take the sleeper trains or the other trains to Edinburgh or to Aberdeen. And they used to go from there to their houses, their country houses, and their places in Scotland. So for that reason, these particular railway lines always used to be particularly well looked after. Well, that is no longer the case. As I said, it was awful. The train journey, especially the one to Edinburgh, was just awful. There were problems with the one coming back from Edinburgh as well. And by the way, I used both tracks on both of these lines. And when I was in Scotland and when I was passing through, you could increasingly see signs of distress there as well. Again, Edinburgh is not perhaps entirely reflective of the whole of Scotland, because Edinburgh is the capital, it's richer, but again, you could see lots of signs of economic distress as well. So overall, again, a picture of a country that is locked at best in stagnation. I would say it's much worse than stagnation myself. I would say it's spiraling downwards. Now, the government, Keir Starmer's government, has now unveiled its budget. And this increased taxes by £26 billion, which, right, in the United States, that might not sound a huge amount. In Britain, it is a huge amount. That means that the total tax burden people are in Britain are now paying is the highest ever. I mean, there's never been a time when the tax burden has been as high as this. So it is a huge increase in the tax burden. And it's basically all being done to plug holes in the budget. In other words, the fact is that Britain has not been raising taxes, enough in taxes, to meet all of its financial obligations. And the reason it's doing that, I mean, there are many reasons, we'll talk about some of them, but I mean, basically the major reason is because the economy is in decline and because the Starmer government is finding it impossible to cut spending. And of course, in a time of recession, spending anyway tends to grow. The budget deficit is yawning wider and wider, so they've had to raise taxes. And of course, the taxes are going to make the recessionary pressures in the economy even greater. And what the government is doing is it's taxing people by, in effect, raising income tax and the major taxes, in other words. And that is going to depress economic activity even further. So it's locking Britain. This budget is going to lock Britain into further decline. We did a program some time ago in which we spoke about the country spiraling downwards. And you can see it if you travel here. And the budget reflects that. What Starmer and his finance minister, Rachel Reeves, gave no indication of having is any plan of how to get Britain out of this situation. They're just basically surviving now from one week to the next. They're always frightened of what the financial markets might do. They don't want a massive crash of the currency, a huge amount of, you know, panic, a financial panic or anything of that kind. So they're just letting the economy slide downwards whilst raising taxes in order to keep the financial markets at bay.
Right. To plug up holes from the money they've given to Project Ukraine.
Yeah.
And to plug up holes from the sanctions that they've gone along with the rest of Europe against Russia, against Russian energy.
Yes.
Those are the big holes.
Yes. You're completely correct. But of course, nobody says
there might be other ones too. I mean, I'm simplifying it
There are lots of things. I mean, if we go all the way back to the financial crisis of 2008, as we know, Britain, like every other big Western country, bailed out its banks, and that massively increased the debt levels. I mean, they doubled from around 36% to over 70%, the debt to GDP level. And that was the biggest increase in debt. And then it's also true that we had COVID and all of that, the lockdowns, and that added to all the problems. And we also now have an exploding welfare bill. But again, people always talk about welfare, but they need what people also need to understand is, yes, there are people who go on welfare because, you know, they want to, or because they think this is the way to, you know, this is an easier life than others. But one of the reasons welfare budgets tend to explode is because the underlying economy is poor. And that means that there's fewer openings for people to work, and they fall into the welfare system. There is a lot of that also going on. And then there's, of course, migration. And the government has completely mismanaged that one as well, because they are completely unable to get a grip on this problem. Because, of course, they run always into opposition from, you know, the various electoral constituencies that still support them or suggest that they might support them. And they can't handle that one either. So, and then, of course, there is Project Ukraine. Give money to Ukraine, £5 billion a year, supposedly. I believe it's an awful lot more than that. You have the highest energy costs in Europe. Some of that is due to the government pushing the green transition, as has happened in Germany. But more of it is because we're disrupting global energy markets by our sanctions, our economic war against the world's biggest single energy producer, which is, of course, Russia. So all of this is the proximate cause for the economic downturn. There were the other things, the financial crisis of 2008, the pandemic, other things. But the proximate cause why things have turned downward so suddenly, so fast over the last 4 years is the war in Ukraine. But no one wants to discuss that. Talk about everything else, but never talk about that.
Is it true that the UK public is very supportive of Ukraine? I was reading a poll the other day which claims that the UK public is still very supportive of Ukraine, and they're very concerned about negotiations with the US and Russia.
Yes, I'm sure that is what the polls say, because nobody in Britain here's any alternative argument. I mean, there are a few sites like ours which push back on this, but the entire media supports the war. All of the political parties, including Reform, support the war. Nigel Farage briefly pushed back against it, but he was basically forced back into line. So it's not as if people in Britain are being provided with any alternative view on this. It's not like, say, Iraq back in 2002, 2003, when there were powerful political figures in Whitehall, in Westminster, who argued against Iraq, and there was dissent about it in the media. The entire political class has closed ranks completely on this one. And beyond that, the costs of the war are never being explained to people. Nobody, as I said, knows that we, in the middle of a budgetary crisis, we transfer huge sums to Ukraine. Nobody makes the link between high energy costs in Britain and the war itself. I mean, these things are never discussed in Britain in that way. So, of course, if you ask people in Britain, given that they have no other sources of information or news, apart from, the few who go onto the internet and take their views from there. But if you go to people and ask them, do you support Ukraine? They say yes. If you ask them, are you hostile to negotiations with Russia? They say yes. But what the polls never indicate is that for people in Britain, this is a very low priority indeed. They may say, we support Ukraine. We don't want negotiations. We want more support for Ukraine. But it's not something that if you knock on the door and during a campaign, as people do from the political parties, and ask them, will you vote for me? People will never say to the campaigners, yes, provided you support Ukraine. They will say, no, I will vote for you if you can reassure me that you will provide me with housing, jobs, and you will do things to bring prices under control and energy costs and those kind of things. Those are the things that really interest people in Britain.
What does the UK do to get out of this mess, this spiral? Does it take the route of Merz and Macron? Actually, both are taking the route of militarization in order to get out of the economic troubles that they have put their countries in. Well, is that the plan from Starmer?
Well, there's a lot of talk about that. And there's a lot of talk about, rebuilding the armed forces and all of this. But bear in mind that, this isn't working in Germany, and Germany has an industrial base, the one that is shrinking very fast. Britain's industrial base is much smaller, and because of the energy costs, it's shrinking. What there is of it is shrinking even faster than Germany's. So how do you do this? How do you spend money on defense when you have a budgetary crisis? And who is going to turn out all the tanks and drones and machines that you would need to wage a war? So the rhetoric is there, but there's no practical way of doing any of this. So militarization is not really any kind of option. How does Britain get out of this? Well, I think that, first of all, you do need a complete change in the political system. I mean, nothing can work. There's no way out whilst we are stuck with the political system that we have. Perhaps if reform were to win with a landslide, that would open up, you know, the scope for debate. We would have people rethinking Ukraine and rethinking all of that. And then we could start thinking about other things. But the way that Britain gets out of this is by doing those things in which Britain is strong. And that is by opening itself up for business to the world, which is what it used to do. In other words, provide all the financial and banking services and all of those things, attract inward investment, provide specialized industrial and manufacturing skills, which we still have, by the way, quite a lot in Britain. I mean, we're still leaders, for example, in audio, in the audio industries and things of that kind. Build up on the still strong university system, which is also sagging, by the way, and which is whittling away, but there's still residual strengths there. What that means, of course, is doing away with sanctions, opposing sanctions, trading with the world, opening up to Russia, opening up to India and China and everywhere, and taking a completely different change of course. And also, and I have to say this, focusing on people in Britain, not trying to deal with your labour issues by importing cheap workers. That ought to be one obvious thing. But also education, focusing on education. Education system is in decline. Addressing that. And carrying out a root and branch reform of the entire administrative system in Britain, which is in a profound state of decay. Now, all of that sounds enormously difficult. In fact, some would say insurmountably difficult. But actually, because we are a relatively contained country, if you had a government that was united and determined to do all of this, I think it could be done. It would take about 5 to 10 years to actually, really carry through the complete transformation. But it could be done. And again, because we are relatively small, people would notice a difference fairly quickly. There would be, a re-energizing of the country and a return of confidence. But of course, to repeat again, with our current political class, whose priorities are completely different, whose priorities are Ukraine, preserving Britain's position as they think as a major power in the world. In other words, looking outside Britain rather than at Britain itself, we're not going to achieve any of those things.
It could be done, but will it be done by the current political class? Or even the up and coming political elite.
Well, indeed. Well, indeed.
Class, I mean.
Well, indeed.
I don't see it. You know better, but I don't see anyone on the horizon.
There is no one on the horizon. What we need, can I just say quickly to end? I mean, we need, first of all, the established parties, Labour, Conservative. By the way, the Liberal Party is just the same. We need to sweep them away. Reform. Has many people in it. Some of them are not very different from the people in the political class now, but there are other people. And if it breaks through, as I said, that might start opening up the window and it might start to let light and air in. And then perhaps things might start to happen.
All right. We will end the video there, theduran.locals.com. We are on X, on Telegram, and on Rumble. We are also on Substack. So check us out there and go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. There's a link in the description box down below. Take care.